Hello and welcome to the second season of the Global Energy Transition Podcast, presented by the Heinrich Böll Stiftung European Union and the Global Energy Transition Blog. I'm your host, Michael Buxbaum, lead blogger, photojournalist, and advisor to theenergytransition.org. Last season, we looked at how the energy transition was developing around the world, but Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the international response to it has altered and largely weaponized the energy transition, the whole of which has now morphed into a global energy crisis. For this second season, we are going to shine a spotlight on the triple crisis of climate, energy, and inflation that we now face, and how these challenges are intertwined and affecting communities worldwide. In this episode, we are going to continue focusing on the nation of Colombia, looking closer at its relationship with Europe and Germany with our guest, who recently traveled to Colombia, German parliamentary member Catherine Henneberger. Like the blogs we publish, all our materials fall under a Creative Commons license and are therefore free for anyone to use, so long as you credit the material. Stay with us. We're going to cover a lot of ground in this episode, and though it is not necessary, it might be helpful for listeners who haven't already heard it to check out our previous podcast on Colombia with guest and Deutsche Welle journalist Judith Alonso. We also published a series of recent blogs on Colombia, too, that'll help with background. But to sum up, for about 30 years, large foreign companies have developed huge coal mines in Colombia with the aim of shipping this hard coal into global markets, something they have been very successful at doing. And investors, with the help of friendly right-wing governments, have enjoyed fabulous returns. But the vast majority of Colombia's population has not shared in any of this wealth, nor the wealth that has come from mining Colombia's oil or gas. Just the opposite. The nation has instead been racked by civil war, today suffers from high levels of poverty, and a large chunk of its population has no access to electricity, especially those who live near the huge and ever-growing surface mines that are swallowing up the lands of many indigenous and Afro-Colombian communities, fouling their water and poisoning their air. Yet, because energy production, especially coal mining, has led to so much guerrilla violence and human rights abuses, civil societies worldwide began a largely successful campaign to get power companies to stop buying and burning Colombian coal. And indeed, throughout Europe, particularly in Germany, that pressure did sway many energy firms. But Russia's February invasion of Ukraine upended that progress. With fears of a looming coal and energy shortage, in April, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz personally called the then-president of Colombia, Iván Duque, asking him to help Germany by exporting lots more coal across the ocean. Though Duque was more than happy to comply, he's no longer in office. Indeed, this summer, Colombians elected their first-ever leftist government into power, leftist and in some ways very green. Outraged by Scholz's coal call, our guest, a green member of Germany's Bundestag, or parliament, Catherine Henneberger, traveled to Colombia, particularly to its oil fields and coal mines, to meet with frontline communities to see for herself the effects of what she terms Germany's colonial behavior. In this interview, Catherine shares her impressions while vowing to fight harder for climate justice, both in Colombia and here in Germany, where coal mining continues to threaten villages and communities, including those of her constituents, with harm. Stay tuned.
So my background in Germany is that I'm from a coal region as well, and we are trying, of course, to phase out coal, but also we're trying to act internationally. And for me, it's very important not only to have a struggle against lignite coal mines in Germany, but also against the coal mines in Colombia, in South Africa, and to work together with the resistance there. And so for me, it It was a huge opportunity as a member of the German parliament to travel to the regions and to connect with the people there, and also to find common ground and solutions how we can phase out coal together.
To kick off our conversation, I asked Catherine, who's weathered a pretty turbulent first year in the Bundestag, to tell us about her Colombian trip, where she started and where she traveled to.
And first we visit the south of Colombia, Putumayo. It's in the Amazon region, and we visit Yanni Silvia. She's a great and very strong woman fighting against oil exploitation in this region. And Amnesty International connected us, and now we agreed to build something like a partnership between us, also because she needs more protection against the violence there in the regions. And so this is also one way that helps her if she has a partnership with someone from the German parliament.
And after visiting with her then in the south, you traveled to the coal-producing regions in the north of the country.
After Putumayo, we visit the north of Colombia, where the huge coal mines are. And so we try to speak to everyone. And we visit the communities from the Vayu, also the Afro-Colombian communities. We met with union workers. And also we visit Cerrejón, the huge coal mine.
How did seeing these people or meeting these people and seeing these regions directly impact the way you thought about fossil fuel production? How did this affect you?
Yeah, so because it was my first time in North Colombia, and of course I read a lot of reports, but it's nothing. It's not the same like being there and talking to the people directly to hear their stories, their struggles. So I felt a lot of guilt. I hope I can say that, because of course it's the German consumption, the high consumption in Germany, that means exploitation and destruction in Colombia. And so it's truly a colonial behavior that we import coal from North Colombia, where human rights are violated, to Germany for our coal power plants. And to listen to the stories, especially to the Vayu woman, it made me very sad, and there was a lot of guilt I felt.
Shortly after you left Colombia, the then Ivan Duque-led government authorized the diversion of a river, of a significant, maybe a stream, the Bruno Stream, which is vital to the indigenous Wayuu people. And this was done to help enable the expansion of production at El Cerrejón, the giant coal mine. Could you talk about how this will affect the Wayuu and the region?
So next to the River Bruno, close to the coal mine, there are still communities like El Rocío. And El Rocío, there are, I think, like 200 people living there. And it's very close to the mine, and they are currently under a threat from the coal mine. We need to find a solution for the River Bruno because, well, some parts of the river were shifted.
I saw they built like a detour for the river, like a way to move it in a different direction.
Yes, yes. But this is also a huge problem because the soil of the underneath the river is now different, and the water is now more sucked into the earth. So when the new way of the River Bruno is affecting the water security of this region. And when we visit El Rocío, we looked also into the direction of the coal mine. And then we found that there were some lagoon from the coal mine with water. And you could see directly that sometimes the water from this lagoon with coal mine water is floated into the direction of River Bruno. And I also found some coal on the ground. So it's the water of this region when they are next to the mine like the River Bruno, but also the River Rancheria, get poisons from the coal mine. And this is also a huge problem for the communities living next and from the water of the river, because water is in this region, so it's very rare.
Yeah, it's scarce. It's a desert, right?
Yes, yes. And so they are directly dependent from the water of the rivers. And so this is also why children get ill, because the water quality is, after passing the mine, is very bad. And it's poisoned.
So as the mine, which can already produce nearly 40 million tons a year, as the mine's expanding to get to the coal underneath the River Bruno, it also swallows up more of the land used by folks in Rocio and other communities for their agriculture. But once that mining is done, the land is essentially done too.
We also visit the regions where they try to renaturate the coal mine. So the company, they showed us like, ooh, this is the new earth and everything is beautiful. But it wasn't. So there were no birds. So you could, it was very silent. It was a very silent ecosystem. And it wasn't not really an ecosystem. It was also very dry. And you could feel it on the plants, on the trees there. Well, still little trees that this kind of ecosystem is not really alive. And then we visit a little lagoon where the water, it was very, well, it stinks. And so they tried to convince me that this was, everything was perfect and beautiful. But I could saw it with my own eyes and I could smell it. And I can hear that this ecosystem wasn't really alive.
So you were there in July. And previously in April, there had been a number of decisions made by both the European governments, the EU, and Germany vis-a-vis Russian coal and trying to find replacements for it. Could you talk about the connection between the decision to go ahead and mine more coal at El Zarajón and to divert the Bruno stream and the German government?
So after the war against Ukraine started, of course, also the coal import from Siberia was no more. And also this is like very important that we don't import coal from Siberia anymore. We should have never done this in the first place. And in this situation, the coal companies from Germany, they switched, they tried to find other import ways from South Africa, from Indonesia, from Australia, but also from Colombia. And we said in the beginning, we said, okay, this cannot be the solution just to go to another place and look for coal. We have to phase out coal sooner and we have to find other ways. And also we have to be aware of the situation, of the human rights situation in these regions. And so also I met with coal companies in Germany. I talked a lot with our government, and also before I went to Colombia, we had, as a German parliament, we also had a huge discussion about how we can find a way in this situation between the impacts of the war against Ukraine and not to go in this direction of having a new fossil lock-in of importing more coal like from North Colombia. And as a parliament, we said that there should be no new coal mines, and the coal mines already existence, they should not expand because of the Ukraine war. So for us, it's very important that we are still finding a way out of the fossil fuels, and we don't forget that there is also a climate crisis. But, well, the coal companies, they have their own way to exist.
Yes, indeed they do. Let's talk more about taking responsibility. I think it's important that we nail this down. I want to go back again to this April phone call and the coal supply deal that German Chancellor Scholz personally negotiated with the then president of Colombia, Iván Duque. Can you walk us through it a bit?
What I know is that Bundeskanzler Olaf Scholz, he spoke to the last president. It was sometimes in April. And then I spoke against that because he called the last president and he said, oh, we need more coal. And for me, it was a little bit like a shock because in the German parliament, we had discussed it in the opposite way. And also in the Committee of Climate and Energy, we discussed it in a different way. And we have to be very careful and we need to be aware of the consequences. And I think that this call was made also for the companies because in Germany, coal companies are very close to some politicians. Well, it's how it is.
Is this why you went to Colombia? Because you know the unchecked political power that these energy companies have? And can you talk about what you did when you were there to take away from this power?
So what I'm doing right now instead is that I'm pushing to create like a climate partnership between Germany and the new government of Colombia to phase out coal together. So it's just in the beginning, but this was also one of the reasons why I wanted to travel to Colombia to build connections and to speak to people directly, also to some members who are now part of the new government, to push the agenda that we have to do better. We have to like build like a climate partnership where it's not only about coal, it's also about forest protection, it's also about oil explorations, and so to work together with this new government.
Colombia's new Gustav Petro and Francia Marquez-led government, being Colombia's first ever left or left-green government, is so different to all that has come before. I asked Catherine about her first impressions of them and how she intends to further this climate partnership.
So yes, one of the now members of the government, I met Susan Muhammad, who's now the environment ministry, and we talked a lot about, well, forest protection, but also about renewable energies, the transition of the energy system in Colombia, and to get more communities access to energy. So to shift it from oil and gas and coal to more like decentralized system in the hands of the people. And we talked also a lot about energy democracy. So we are trying to stay in contact. Sometimes it's difficult, but because we live so far from each other and we are all so busy. But yes, and we talked a lot about possibilities about like a climate alliance. And we learned a lot from each other. So she's a very progressive person, and I'm looking forward to this new government changing the way it was. So changing also to understand the need. So my feeling was they understand the need of the communities, and they prefer to work for the people than to work for the fossil fuel industry.
How would you describe Germany's pre-war, pre-Ukraine, or Russia's invasion of Ukraine? How would you describe our relationship with Colombia's energy sector? And to what extent was Germany's use of Colombian hard coal on the decline before the invasion?
Yes, so before the invasion, some coal companies, they tried to get out of Colombia, so they imported less coal from this region. Also because there was a huge campaign of the civil society about human rights violations, also in Germany. But then it was 2018, something like that, and then the coal companies started to import more coal from Siberia. And they were very proud of it. So yes, I remember one situation when someone from a coal company told me, we are so proud, we are now importing more from Siberia and less from Colombia. That's so cool. And then I explained to him that in Siberia also there are also human rights violations, and there are also indigenous communities under threat. So it's not a good idea also to import from Russia.
Perfect. Good job. But now with the war, in a time of energy necessity here in Europe, while the European Union and much of the world has stopped importing Russian coal, buyers, with the direct assistance of elected officials, have returned to Colombia despite the potential impacts.
And now we are like in this situation where human rights, for the coal companies, the question of human rights doesn't count anymore. So in North Colombia, this is a very sad situation. I hope I can say this. So my feeling is right now it's more about the national energy needs and not about what global impact has the import from coal in other regions. So Germany, right now, we are all looking at our own needs, and we don't want to be aware. We choose to not to be aware of the situation in North Colombia. We choose not to be aware of how other indigenous communities are doing. Instead, we are demanding that there will be energy for us all the time, and we are demanding that we have a high consumption of energy still. And also the industry is, it's not about like normal people, it's more also about the industry. And so we are choosing to tolerate human rights violations because our system still depends on burning fossil fuels.
But of course, it's not enough to just be in office to stop coal mining or dare break existing contracts, right? Tell us what you learned that is also stopping members of the new Colombian government from making a clean break.
This is something I take with me, that there is some are very afraid of the possibility that they get sued by the companies. And this is a huge problem. So if a government cannot act because they are afraid they're getting sued, there's something we have to do about that. And so it's also, for me, it's very important, for example, to crash the Energiekartervertrag, the Energy Charter Treaty. And so we are also currently working on that. I don't know if I can achieve all of that, but we are trying our best.
Listeners, this treaty, the Energy Charter Treaty, with all its secret tribunals and energy company protections, has become a terrible entanglement which many nations are forced to deal with now as they try to move away from coal or from fossil fuels at all. There's a reason why there is a growing list of nations trying to, as Catherine says, crash out of it. And we may end up doing a podcast solely on it, certainly a few blogs, but given the ECT's complexity, for now, back to Colombia. Beyond coal, there's also the question of using Colombia's oil and fossil gas, some of which could be fracked gas, as replacements for Russian supplies, given that there are also human rights concerns with how these fossil fuels are being produced. I asked Catherine if there was any discussion about this in Germany's parliament.
So there is no openly discussion about the topic. So right now I'm hoping that they won't allow fracking in Colombia, so that the new government will end this fantasy of fracking. But of course we can never be sure. So I think what is very important is that we need to phase out from coal, but also from oil and from gas. We need a gas exit as well. So this is also the reason why it was for me very important also to travel to the south of Colombia to visit the areas who are affected by the oil industry and talking there to the communities. So today I talked a lot about coal, but also for me it's very important also to fight against oil and gas.
You previously termed the German government's new position on accepting coal and other fossil fuel imports from Colombia as colonial exploitation, or at least that's how it was translated into the English press.
And yes.
what do you mean by that? And you know, to what extent have we, by turning away from Russian supplies, from Siberian supplies, and re-embracing Colombian ones, to what extent has Germany just simply switched from one blood coal to another?
Yes, that's exactly what happens. And I think to understand the climate crisis and to find a solution to the climate crisis, we have to be aware of colonial behavior and colonial economy. And we only can find solution against the climate crisis if we address it and if we try to build up a new way of economy. So I'm a huge fan of degrowth and of system change, so to try to change our system. And I think this is very important. And also to speak up if something happens, like Olaf Scholz talking to the old president of Colombia and saying, oh, we need more coal. And I think it's very important for me as a member of the parliament to say, hey, this was not correct. And this is colonial behavior.
Yeah, this is called democracy, folks. You know, this idea that members of parliament can speak out against their leaders, even if they're in coalition with them. You know, we all need these checks and balances. And by the way, thank you again for that, too. I don't know how many voices like yours were out there in April or earlier this year saying, hey, wait a minute, we need to be careful. The choice that we make, we need to have the lights on here in Germany, but it's important to know where that fuel comes from.
Yes. So the civil society of while the climate justice movement in Germany is also very strong, and also my check and balance, when I can say that. And so what I think, which is very important, what the climate justice movement in Germany did this year was to talk about and to have actions on gas, to have their huge action in Hamburg, because this is a topic surely no one wants to talk about, because we have to find ways to exit gas as quickly as possible as well. But right now, no one in the government wants to talk about exit strategies. They only talk about, oh, how can we buy more gas and how can we build a contract with Senegal for new gas exploration. So it's a huge problem, and we have to stand against this and try to find ways to stop the madness.
Gas is green anyway, isn't it? I mean, it's supposedly a renewable, sustainable resource under the new European mandate.
Yeah, this was very bizarre. This is a very bizarre situation, yes.
I should drop into the podcast here that before Catherine ran for German parliament, she was already very much involved in the climate movement. I actually first interviewed her when she was still serving as the press spokesperson for Ende Gelände, a direct action-oriented group that's become sort of synonymous with activists using their bodies to blockade coal traffic, or for its activists often wearing something like surgical scrubs, swarming into coal pits and occupying the mines and machinery to both shut them down and draw attention to the climate damage they were or are still causing, particularly in and around the districts Catherine now represents. I asked her about how, during her time with Ende Gelände, how activists were also working and making common cause with environmental defenders in Colombia.
During my time in Ende Gelände as an activist, of course, the coal in Colombia was also a huge topic. And we tried to speak about that as well. And we also blockaded and occupied some coal power plants who are burning coal from Colombia. So, and we tried to stop the new coal power plant Datun 4. This was 2020. But next to my work by Ende Gelände, I also was active on global level, visiting the UN climate conferences, and there we connected with a lot of other activists around the world, and especially people who are also struggling against coal mines.
And of course, this struggle is happening close to your home district west of the city of Cologne, where several of the largest open pit lignite mines in Europe feed two of the three most polluting power plants in the continent, and frankly, some of the worst and most polluting power plants in the world.
Yes, I'm very close to the coal mines. Right now, I'm very close to Garzweiler. So we have two huge coal mines, Garzweiler and Hambach. The Hambacher coal mine is maybe famous for the Hambacher forest. And the coal mine of Garzweiler is maybe now famous for defending the villages against the coal mine. When I went into parliament, there were six villages threatened to get destroyed by the coal mines. And then we put it on the table of the coalition talks. And in the end, we could save five villages of the six. But one last village, Lützerath, we still have to fight for. And my feeling is it will be like the hardest fight of all. But we will never give up.
Lützerath is also not far from Bonn, where we're recording. I was up there on a recent Sunday for an organized walk through the activist-occupied village, and not surprisingly, I ran into Catherine. Previously, when I interviewed her for our podcast, I had asked Catherine about the importance of Lützerath and about the campaign on the federal level to save it from destruction.
So the coal company of our region, RWE, is talking about the Ukraine war. And then in the next sentence it says, oh, this is why we have to destroy the village Lützerath. We also addressed that in the German parliament. And as German parliament, we decided that Lützerath has to stay. But of course, this is just the position of the German parliament. It's no paragraph And so right now there are talks between politics and RWE, and RWE is still convinced that it needs Lützerath, and we don't know what will be the outcome, but nevertheless, we will have a huge struggle about Lützerath. Right now, I'm trying different and other ways to, as a politician, to find ways how to I can stop it. Because this is truly, like I said, a story. The area of Lützerath and Lützerath itself, it's owned by RWE. So we are in a very difficult legal situation. And so there are negotiations with RWE, and we don't know the outcome yet. And of course, RWE, they want something for that, maybe a lot of money.
I've written a few new blogs about this, which you can definitely check out. But let's return to Colombia. We've talked a lot about their coal and fossil fuels, but we really haven't touched much on the renewable situation there, which is also quite complicated. Firstly, the majority of the electricity generated and used in Colombia is hydro and therefore clean, but the nation has an incredible solar and wind potential, much, much higher than global averages. And in the last few years, energy producers, with the help of various international development banks, have begun siting both wind and solar farms throughout the country. Although, ironically and sadly, much of the nation either doesn't have access to electricity or can't afford it when it's available. Additionally, many of the best sites for wind and solar and much of the development so far has taken place on indigenous Wayuu and Afro-Colombian lands, often without their consent. I asked Catherine about her impressions of Colombia's energy transition and how she thinks it could be developed in a more just way going forward.
So, yes, it was also a topic in my talks in Guajira with members of the indigenous community of the Wayuu. And there was some members of the communities who were strongly against it. And some members, they thought about it as an opportunity. But it's a very difficult situation. And we need to find ways that the communities are deciding how the land is used. And that it's not like the coal mines where the community are forced out. So we have to be aware of that there should be no huge wind farms destroying the land of the indigenous people again. So we need more like decentralized energy system with a lot of solar, where the communities have their own little solar park, so they have their own access and they control their own access. So this is a better way to establish energy security. And so this is also some projects we are now talking about and trying to find solution also to support projects. And a just transformation needs to be inclusive, and it needs to respect the rights of the indigenous people. And if this doesn't happen, there won't be any just transformation.
What have I not asked you? I've asked you a lot of questions during this conversation, and I hadn't even thought that we would get to Senegal or to Africa. I'm sure there's so much more. What have I not asked you that you would like to go ahead and tell our listeners about?
We haven't talked about the impact of the climate crisis. It's in every region we visit, when we talk to members of the communities, when we talk to farmers. It was always a huge topic because, in the forest area in Putumayo, it was a huge topic because the seasons are changing very quickly. The season when there's more rain and the season where there's less rain, it's changing very quickly, and this is a huge problem for the people there because they used to have like a cyclus, so everything changes. Also, they are trying to find their own way of climate adaptation and building climate resilience, which also a school for trees. And this is something which impressed me a lot. And also in the north of Colombia, because of the climate crisis, it's getting more, the regions, they're affected more by heat waves and also droughts. And so they're feeling the impact of the climate crisis, and they're feeling the impact of the coal mines. And in the future, there will be a huge problem with water security. There is already a huge problem with water security, but it's going to be very bad for this region. And so we need also to find ways to be more climate resilient also in this region.
Where can our listeners find you? What's the best way for them to contact you?
Over email, katrin.henneberger@bundestag.de, or you can find me on Twitter @katrinanna.
Catherine, thank you so much, so very, very much for coming on our show and explaining this to our listeners. And your insights and what you saw is so valuable. Thank you for all that you do.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. Thank you for the opportunity for this interview. And I hope that there was some insight.
And a big thanks to all you listeners who've tuned in and stayed tuned in. You have been listening to the Energy Transition Podcast, a product of the Heinrich Böll Stiftung's Energy Transition Platform. We'd like to thank the Energy Transition team in the EU office in Brussels, including our new colleague Lisa Santner, who's taking over Lisa Tosado's former role. Yeah, that's a lot of Lisa power. As well, we'd like to go ahead and thank Martin Keim and Joan Lanfranco in the EU office in Brussels for their assistance as well. Thanks for your edits and support, Dr. Seuss. And lastly, a huge shout out once again to our podcast amazing producer, the sound guru, expert axe thrower, and musical tour champion, Christian Kreienborg. From the former German capital city of Bonn, I wish you all smooth sailing on what could be rough seas ahead. Until next time.